Well, happy Thursday, and welcome to yet another edition of Perspectives on WFSU-FM. How you doing today? I'm Tom Flanagan, that is, and you are always welcome to be part of the conversation at 850-414-1234. If you got one of those old-fashioned landlines, and one or two people in the listening area do, you can even call us toll-free. How about that? 800-926-8809 is that number. If email's your preferred form of communique, it is perspectives@wfsu.org, or send us a tweet at @WFSUPerspective. Well, you know, of course, as the state capital of Florida, Tallahassee is just full. We are overdosed. We are crammed with people who make their living arguing for or against any number of things before the legislature. And some of these folks even take those campaigns to Washington, and they'll lobby members of Congress. And maybe on occasion you'll catch a few of these advocates and lobbyists on TV, or read op-ed columns that they've written for the newspapers, or a blog that they put out online. And if they're really good at what they do, they may receive an award or two. And after years and years of this, when they look back on their long and hopefully successful careers, a couple of them might even write a book explaining why they did what they did. But what I've described has, to my recollection, never applied to anyone who just entered middle school. Until now. And WFSU is delighted beyond measure to welcome advocate, lobbyist, and now author Paloma Rambana to Perspectives. Paloma, it is good to see you in this context, my dear. And congratulations on the book, Paloma's Dream, that just came out. You and your mom. And we will, in full disclosure, mention that her mom's law firm, along with her dad's, that is the immigration law firm based in Tallahassee of Rambana and Ricci, also produced Paloma, and by extension, her book, Paloma's Dream, which is available out right now. We're going to talk about that, but also your history of advocacy that goes back, what, to when you were nine?
Yes, so long ago.
Yeah, it just seems like yesterday. Well, for those folks who have not yet read Paloma's Dream, and we hope that you will, because it is, as we put it, a crackling good narrative for sure. How did you get involved in advocacy to begin with? It is not the kind of thing that your average young person jumps into. I want to be a lobbyist.
Yes, definitely. It took the power of having lawyers at parents, and they were pushing me to get involved in civic responsibility, as well as having my wonderful original Lighthouse teacher, Jennifer Crowder, reach out to my parents and say, look, there's this issue. Can you help? You're the person we need because you're articulate and you know how to speak English. So can you do that for us?
Well, you mentioned Lighthouse there, the Big Bend Lighthouse for the Blind. And the reason that you were involved in advocacy to begin with was you had a case of the twitches when you were first born. And that was a good thing. Tell us
yes.
why.
So when I was born, I had a condition called Peter's anomaly that we found out through the way of twitching of my body when I was younger was something that we needed to check out. So when I was born, I had this condition, and I still have this condition to a lesser degree, and it has made me legally blind. I hope that answers your question.
Okay, yeah, it sure does. But that also means that you're not probably going to be able to drive anytime soon.
Well, to answer that question, I am not quite sure. I have 4 years to figure that out. But I was told by my doctors I wouldn't be able to read, write, or drive. So right now I've accomplished 2 out of 3 of those things. And with technology such as Tesla, thank you, Elon Musk, we can make those things possible for blind and visually impaired.
Yeah, that's right. The self-driving car might mitigate a lot of problems like your situation here, Paloma. But now, instead of just kind of kicking back and going, oh, poor, poor, pitiful me, this is a terrible thing and it's going to impact the rest of my life and all, you kind of turned that around and went very, very public with it. And how did that start?
I really felt that when I was reached out by Jennifer and I found out there were over 1,000 kids in Florida like me who were visually impaired and blind, and I realized, wow, I can make a difference with my condition, and these are people who live with it like me 24/7, and I can really tell them and help them, and I reached out through the internet and social media to get their acknowledgement and like see them react and be like, oh yeah, I'm in that same place as well. And I got a lot of support that way and starting off with learning, I guess.
Okay, but there's also a financial component to all this because the state would help to fund children with this condition up to a certain age, but there was a group that was being excluded, and this is how you got involved in this.
Right. So there is funding for infants from 0 to 5 and from teenagers from 14 to 22, but there is no central funding for when 80% of learning occurs through vision in the 6 to 13 age group in Florida.
When you started the advocacy at 9, the first time you went to the Capitol, there was a certain, shall we say, signature chant that you guys had. What was that?
Snap, clap, fund the gap. Yes, the chant that will live in infamy.
Which, is there a gap now? Were you successful in advocating the legislature to change this around?
There is still a gap. Yes, there is a gap. And we have received successfully $1,250,000 and $500,000. Recurring in the state budget, but we are still not waiting. We are still going to continue to try and receive the total $8 million in funding to get all these children into this filled gap.
Oh, crap. There's still a gap. Pretty much, right?
Wonderful.
Okay.
The new chant.
There we go. Let's go to the phones. And by the way, that's 850-414-1234. Lenita joins us. Hey, Lenita, welcome to Perspectives.
Thank you so very much. First of all, I would just like to again congratulate Paloma. I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to read the proof of her book. I am a retired educator, 45 years. 25 of those years I spent as a library media specialist. So I'm just calling in to encourage library media specialists, public libraries, people, anyone who likes to read, especially our young people, to get a copy of her book. It is a book that deals with so many subjects that our young people are dealing with, but it also will help us older people to understand that people are people and that we should treat them that way. I applaud Paloma for all of the hard work that she has done at such a tender young age, and I'm going to encourage her to keep on and that we as adults should take on some of the characteristics that this young lady possesses.
Oh, that is so nice, Lenita.
Thank you.
Yes, it's so great to hear from you. And so she read an advanced copy of your book. How did that idea come up, Paloma, with everything else that you've done? Oh, okay, I got an additional 10 or 15 minutes. Think I'll write a book.
Well, I have always enjoyed to write. That is something I really enjoy doing. And I think that through literature, and especially in this book, I can really tell my story. And it's condensed into 77 pages, but yes, I'm still telling my story. And it took a lot of more than 15 minutes to think of this idea of writing a book. And I think it's a very wonderful journey. It's long and it is a lot of hard work, but it's not something you can become an overnight success with necessarily, with me anyway. And it took a lot of time to go over and make a plan and per se.
All right. And we will mention that the book Paloma's Dream is available now. Midtown Reader has picked it up. Thank you, Sally Bradshaw. That was very nice. And I think the Boys and Girls Clubs libraries, of which there are 7 around the area, also now have it on their shelves. And that is another outlet for it. And I guess you'll soon be going to, available online, of course.
Yes, it is available online via my website, palomasdream.org.
Okay, which is a great website, too. And if you are anticipating reading the book, I was telling Paloma before we started, about an hour and 15 minutes. I read fast, but I literally could not turn it down. It is a page turner, and it is not a children's book, folks, by any stretch of the imagination. But it also has some wicked, wicked humor in there. Not nasty, not obscene, but you are a very funny person.
Thank you so much.
And from one human to another, it's Caroline joins us. A third human jumps into the conversation here on Perspectives. Hi, Caroline. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How are you?
We're doing good. Great. Thank you.
Well, I just want to say I read your book, of course, and I mean, it really blew me away. I cannot believe that a middle schooler wrote that book. So I want to ask you, what about the writing process of your book, What was your favorite part about it? What did you learn? Do you love writing? Do you think you want to write another book? And what advice do you have for somebody who also wants to write a book?
Thank you for the most amazing question ever by the most amazing person ever. Yes, I love to write. I learned a lot, and I would definitely write another book, not per se about myself just yet, but more about fictional characters and fictional lifestyle and all that kind of jazz. But I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about my past, things that I don't really remember, and I learned a lot from my parents and the ways they would describe stories that I would want to include. So my favorite part was probably discovering myself and learning about where I was going to be and who I was and where I'm going to go and how everything is played out into this wonderful human who is breathing air.
Which is a good prerequisite for most humans, or at least carbon-based life forms. But what was the... When you sat down to this, and it's a daunting task, no matter how much you love reading, writing can be work, really hard
definitely.
Work. So what was your favorite part of that? Just going back to like mom and dad and saying, all right, the parts before I really have a cognition of what happened, can you tell me what went down there or what?
I think one of my favorite parts was thinking of my brain as a timeline and just going through my brain and looking at the different memories. And those were different stops on a train, and you got off at this stop and you examined that stop and you were like, okay, I'm going to get back on the train and go to another stop, or I like this one, let's continue onwards. So I think rediscovering myself and getting to learn a lot from my parental units.
Paloma Rambana is our special guest here today on Perspectives, the author of Paloma's Dream, also an advocate, a lobbyist, a person who is very much involved in the issue of filling the gap when it comes to young people with vision problems here in the state of Florida, and much still to come on that. You're invited to be part of this chat at 850-414-1234 or drop us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. We'll be right back. Back on Perspectives with Paloma Rambana, and I got derailed at the very outset of the program. We were talking about, full disclosure, that the law firm of Rambana and Ritchie, which is your parents' immigration law firm, Paloma is a perennial underwriter here on WFSU, so we want to get that out there. But regardless, we would have wanted you to come on the program because, again, your story is so riveting. And it is also such a cautionary tale for parents who think, oh my gosh, what if my child wants to do something totally out of the box, like wind up at the Capitol? Because you have so few young people that go to the Capitol. So I got to ask you, now that you are in middle school, a new adventure for sure, do you get any kind of reaction, pushback, critique from classmates about the other stuff that you do outside of the classroom?
Definitely. I would say that as a middle school student who ever so happens to be a lobbyist, it's time consuming, and it's something that makes your school life more difficult to go through. And you have a lot of different people who will make it more challenging. But I would say, yes, there's a lot of critique and there's a lot of wonderful support. So it's a really nice mixed bag of people. And I think it's difficult to go back to school after being on a lobbying excursion, per se. But it's also a wonderful thing to be like, you're back and we missed you. Now you have so many tests to make up.
Back to reality.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Fun's over. All right. Now, Boyd joins us here on Line 3 on Perspectives. Thanks for your patience, Boyd. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. First, Paloma, again, congratulations. I had the pleasure to read the book, read it in one sitting. Fantastic writing, and not at all surprised after meeting you of how well it was put together. I had the pleasure of meeting Paloma through our company, Prudential, who does a Spirit of Community Awards program that recognizes student volunteers and rising stars such as Paloma. And Paloma actually was a national winner of that award, and actually saw her lights, her name in lights up in Times Square, and very, very well-deserved honor. And I want to say, just keep shining that light, keep being a leader. Those folks who sometimes give you a hard time or whatever, I would say that's more about them than it is about you. But again, just so honored to know you, and congratulations for everything you've accomplished already.
Thank you
so
much.
And you're just beginning.
Thank you, Boyd. We sure appreciate that. And I see another gentleman who blasted right through your book in record time, because it is so, it is a page-turner, and so many autobiographies out there, and you've read some of them, Paloma, are just prattling on and on and on, and it kind of gets boring, and
yes.
Eventually you think, I'll put this down, I'll get back to it later, like maybe never, and, you know. Was that by design, or just the way that you think and talk and speak?
I think it was a combination. I know a lot of people, especially in the millennial Generation Z age, don't want to read. And I didn't want this to be a book where they were like, oh, I really don't want to read. And I want them to be on the edge of their seats for as long as possible, which may seem like I'm leaving them on a cliff, but I don't want it to be where they're stuck and they don't get the end they want. I want it to be where they can get the end they want, but they can also enjoy the storyline enough where they can understand everything.
Well, you certainly had some collaboration in putting this together. Young woman is an island for sure when it comes to an exercise of this caliber. And so I think one of your partners in crime is joining us here on line one. Hi, Hillary. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to say that this was such a rewarding project to work on for me because of the important work that Paloma has done and that she continues to do. And because when I got to know her, I realized, you know, her book can be really fun. She has a great sense of humor, and she's endearing and analytical, and all of that really comes through in her story.
Hillary, talk about that collaborative process that you had with Paloma in putting her book together.
Well, we talked a lot about filling out the scenes. She has all these moments, you know, on a timeline, these things that she's done where she's received this award or went to this event, and we talked about the idea of, with writing, to be in the moment, you know, fill in the details, the background, the way she felt while that was happening. And I always say, you know, it's like you got to put the reader in the moment with you. And I think that we were able to do that. And she's a good storyteller.
Yeah, and you're right about the humor. I love the little quips at the end of each chapter where you're in a very serious, in some instances, issue-driven kind of discussion, and you think, oh my gosh, how did that, and suddenly your bubble gets popped by one of these little spontaneous outbursts
yes.
that she has. Was that your idea, or was that hers?
Well, you know, I mean, we talked together, and she would say things that were funny, and we would, you know, put that in, and I mean, it's her humor and maybe my finesse, we'll say.
Well, it's a good collaboration. And Hillary Ring, thank you so much for everything you did to bring this project to fruition. And before we went on the air, Paloma was speaking so glowingly of working with you on this. And it's a great book. Thank you so much for what
yes.
you did on it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And I think we had fun, too. And that was, you know, it was definitely rewarding.
Yeah, I'm thinking Paloma is, let's see, if you're the Elton John, is Hillary the Bernie Taupin here, that collaboration that brings up something that is greater than the sum of its parts or what?
Yes, sure. Yes, gladly.
Well, you're talking about the unwillingness of some younger people to read, but there's also seemingly among some of them an unwillingness to get involved, whether it's nothing I do is going to make a difference, or it's too much work, or it's boring, or something. What kind of message did you hope to impart to young people using your example here in this book and also what you do?
I wanted to really embody that even you can, even you, anyone, you plural, can make a difference, and how I wanted to put in their minds how this is a girl and I'm visually impaired and I'm 12 and I'm making a difference, and you can be at any age and at any stage of your life, and it doesn't have to be boring, and nothing has to be boring. Honestly, reading is not boring. Nothing has to be boring, and you can really turn things around and just make a change, little or small. And I mean, I'll give the example of trash, and you, like, when you use a plastic straw, you don't think it'll make as much of an effect on the environment as it does. So rethinking those kind of little decisions that are part of your everyday routine is something that I wanted to embody in this novel.
Well, visual impairment is the focus, of course, on your efforts as far as advocacy and the topic, primary topic in your book and all, but what other things are you passionate about?
I'm very passionate about being creative and expressing yourself. I've always liked to create. Art is one of my favorite things in the world. It's something I think should be expressed more often, and see that you can get your message across in many different ways via art. And I'm very passionate about art and writing and reading and working together and being collaborative and bouncing ideas in a round table or in a square-shaped table, whatever you'd like to sit at.
And if you see the copy, and it's all over social media right now, Facebook is just absolutely blowing up with iterations of your work and your photo and everything else right now. But if you see the front piece, the cover of Paloma's Dream, there is a line drawing, a caricature of the aforementioned Paloma Rambana, and that is your work. You did that.
Yes, that is my work, and it is based off of when I took parts of a book, and it was an old book, and I just cut it up, and I put that behind a Sharpie. I took plastic and then I wrote my face and my features on a Sharpie piece of plastic, and I got this little human like sculpture selfie in art. So that's what's on the book.
Okay, that's where that came from. I was wondering how you did that, because it is really inventive where you take a actual page of the text and you put that in the background, superimpose
right.
Then your image on top of it. But it's very well done. And as, again, full disclosure, an old art teacher, I'm looking at this and going, wow,
yes.
This was very,
fifth
very
grade
well done.
Art class really, really shook up my artistic talent.
Let's see, Cameron is on line two and joins us here on Perspectives. Hi, Cameron.
Hey there. I'm calling today to congratulate my former student, our middle school, Paloma, and tell her that her true story is incredibly inspiring to all ages. Your humor is beyond amazing, and what I find most incredible is the amount of life that you've packed into your short number of years on this planet. And for my own daughter, who's coming into middle school, I look forward to having you be an inspiration for her and all of her classmates. And I'm just want to say I'm so proud of you, so thank you.
Thank you for being an awesome humanoid in this planet.
Well, you said something, when life gives you lemons, you make orange juice.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, way to go, Paloma.
Thank you.
Everybody in the play is so proud of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, let's get into middle school then. Coming off of first year, tougher than you thought it was going to be, or?
Well, I'm going into eighth grade in the fall, so it has been a very fun past 2 years of education, and I've gone through going to D.C., and I didn't get to go to the Kennedy Center last year, but I was in New York, ever so happened to be receiving the Hasbro Award. But middle school is a heck of a time, guys. I'm not going to tell you it's easy, but I'm not going to tell you it's hard, because it's just that center part where you're just like the gray area of a Venn diagram.
But how do you balance that? Even grown-up humanoids, if you will, have trouble getting that time management thing down where, look, I really, really want to do this, and I may do it a little bit more than I should because I want to avoid the other stuff over here that I don't want to do. How do you do that?
I wouldn't say I'm a pro at time management, and it's something I struggle with, especially with school, but I think it takes a lot of time to prioritize what you want to do and what you need to do, and coming up with a balance is different for everybody. I think for me, it's just knowing that, like, you can have a balance, and that's absolutely 100% true. It just takes time to get to that solid ground where you're like, okay, I can make time on the weekends to do what I want to do, and then I can sacrifice times in my week when I can take off and do this that I need to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. It just means a lot of self-awareness, though. You got to ride herd on yourself,
right?
Essentially. That's tough.
Very, very difficult.
Yeah. Something that is also tough is the whole perceptual challenges that you have because of the visual situation here. But we live in an age of machinery and electronics and all, and you've got some gizmos that kind of make your life a little bit easier and more, shall we say, normal, although what is normal?
Yeah, I am a gadget girl. I have so many 21st century gadgets that have made it through my visually impaired career, and I give them names because even though they're inanimate objects and they can't breathe air, they can do as much for me as anyone else needs from a random normal textbook or whatever. So I use Cecile, which is my CCTV, which is something that abbreviates for something I don't remember right now. Whoops. And I use Cecile for doing document readings and reading pages of my books at school, and mainly for math. And the struggle is real in math class. So that's why I feel it's important to use it and utilize my way of seeing what's on the board when my teachers are like writing on the board and I'm like, I cannot see whatever you're doing because it looks like it's a white piece of paper.
Yeah, and you described in the book that it's sort of like viewing the world through frosted glass.
Yes, I will say that is 120 bajillion% accurate, seeing the world through frosted glass. And without glasses, people will be like, how many fingers am I holding up? And I'm like, it's not like that. I know how many fingers you're holding up. And it's things that I can see, and I can see shapes, and I can see a lot. And frosted glass to me means like it's a little bit more challenging, but I can still see. So that's something that matters to legal blindness, which isn't an actual definition on what people can and can't see.
So if you had your druthers and the power of, well, I guess, teleportation from the future or whatever, and you could custom design a device that would, if not solve all of your problems, really make a big dent in it, what would that be?
It would be very complicated. It would be a device that would have many functions, and it could incorporate a lot of technology that we're getting, like being able to use self-driving cars, being able to use things like Amazon Echo to make their be where blind people can manage around their room with technology of UI and AI.
And so you could actually fly in a visual overlay, maybe
right
directly into the frontal cortex, and boom.
Yeah. It would be like having a video camera inside of your brain, I guess. And then just having it all work out like a robotic algorithm.
Well, we seem to have a lot of visual capabilities now on the internet that we didn't even have 5 years ago.
Right.
And maybe that could get us in the direction of where you need to go.
Definitely. I use my iPhone and my iPad a lot, which I have to have for school. No, I don't have to have a phone for school. I have to have an iPad for school. But they have the magnification feature, which is super awesome for me to use because of the way I just have to click the home button 3 times. And there I can zoom in or zoom out and choose the different colors I need to see things and get as close and pixelate the screen as much as I possibly want.
Oh, that is neat. And in 5 years, there will, I'm sure, be some other things that are going to be even more awesome than that you
yes
can use. So, this is a good time, maybe.
Definitely a grand time to blossom in the world of technology.
Well, we still have a gap to fill, and we want to talk about that here. We're about two-thirds of the way through this exercise here, Paloma. So I tell you, time really races right by. We also have Marcia, who is waiting a chat with you here on line one. And Marcia, if you can hang on, you'll be first out of the box as we get into our next aspect of perspectives. We want to remind you, too, you can always find the program online at WFSU.org. You just go to that aforementioned URL, click on radio, and then pull down the programs menu. We got them all there for you, Capitol Report and everything else. And amongst that will be listed perspectives. We archive our past shows, and we try to have the latest program up within, well, by close of business day or within 24 hours of when it actually airs on the radio, so you can go back and hear it again and again if you missed something the first time or you tuned in during the final moments and, oh, heck, I really wanted to catch that show. It'll be there available online for you. In the meantime, join the conversation with Paloma Rambana at 850-414-1234, or you can send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org, and we would love to hear from you. You're always welcome to join the conversation. And also a program note, starting the week of July 9th, we go into political perspectives mode for 2 weeks. We'll have the candidates for Leon County Commission, Leon District School Board, and Tallahassee City Commission for those 2 weeks. We hope you can join us then, too, right here on Perspectives. We are back on Perspectives. Our special guest, the author of Paloma's Dream, Paloma Rambana, here on WFSU. And as promised, let's go to line one and Marcia, who has been patiently awaiting. Hi, Marcia.
Hi there.
Yes, ma'am. Go right ahead.
Paloma, this is Marcia Warfel. I am with Volunteer Florida, and I'm a dear friend of your lovely parents, and I've been involved in many women and girls organizations here in Tallahassee, and I've worked with you all pretty closely over the years, and I just wanted to say how very proud I am of you and all the work that you're doing and how impactful it is to so many of our youth with similar special needs in our community and around, and I'm just so happy for you, overjoyed, and wanted to let you know that obviously you have my support and the support of so many other women and girls here in our community, and I wish you all the best in your dreams and your vision, and keep moving forward.
Thank you.
Paloma, does that kind of bother you, though, that whole role model thing? It's one thing to fit in with everyone and feel, hey, you know, normal carbon-based life form here and all that, mm-hmm. but suddenly you're kind of elevated and people say, okay, now everyone look at Paloma. This is how we need more of our young people to be, and she is an example. And you talk about no pressure. That's the ultimate pressure.
It doesn't bother me. I enjoy being able to model being a productive human, and I like to share with people how I can be a person they can look to, not as someone that I'm bragging and I'm look at me, I'm so great. It's look at me and look at how you can be like me and we can be upstanding, elevated together.
Okay, so you don't have the fear of, oh my gosh, if I screw up, this is going to be absolutely horrible because everyone's kind of looking at me?
I think that there's a good balance between being afraid and being able to conquer fears. And I think there's a balance between being able to do a radio interview like this one and being able to talk like conversationally, and then being able to talk to a lot of people making a student council speech and freezing up, because they're two different things, but they are alike in the way of talking to people. but they look and they really give yourself a survey, and you're like, okay, how did I do? Do I feel like I made a 10 out of 10? How is the pain of self-embarrassment? A 9 out of 10? Oh, okay. Well, we need to redo how we took that and reformat our way of being for the next time we do this again.
All right. So you just kind of learn and go, okay, fine. I did this. I'm not going to do that again. I'll do something else.
Well, I'm not saying I'm not self-deprecating, and I'm not going to tell you and lie that I don't self-deprecate myself when things go wrong, because I'm like everyone else and I make mistakes because I'm only human, and I have made many mistakes that I don't really love myself about all the time, and it causes me to be not the most happy human, but I try and move past it after a while. It takes a few moments, but I get there, and maybe I just hide it under all of the dirty laundry, per se.
No, I just remember a song. It's probably from your mom and dad's era, too. It was called Human, and that was part of it. You know, you're only human, and you're going to be bound to make mistakes, and it happens to everybody.
Yes.
Okay. Kaya joins us here. I think I pronounced that right. Perhaps I made a mistake, and I do all the time. Kaya, hey, welcome to Perspectives. Hi.
Hi there. You said it perfectly. Thank you.
Thank you.
I called because I wanted first to congratulate Paloma on all of her accomplishments. I know your parents. I met you when you were little, but every time I turn around, I hear about another fabulous achievement of yours, and I'm just happy for you and for your parents, and like others have said, keep on going. I know you will. You don't need me to say that, but it's great. I'm thrilled for you and your parents. Also, my daughter has a reading difference, which is a learning difference called dyslexia, and it's been a long time to get educators to realize that she needs assistive technology, and she's now being able to read books by ear reading, which is, listening. And so I'm wondering if your book is going to be made into an audio book, or if it already has been. It's brand new, I guess, so it's in line, I hope, to be audio so that many other people with visual disabilities, impairments, or learning differences can listen to it by ear reading.
To answer your question, Kaya, I will be making my audiobook, and I will be reading it all myself. So it is in the process of being recorded, and we will have it at the end of the summer, hopefully. I can't make any promises yet. That is something part of our bucket list on this book in our new chapter.
Fabulous. Why would I even think any otherwise? I was pretty sure you were going to say something positive, but you've already been doing it. And did you say you're the person doing the narration?
Yes, that is 100% what I said.
Fabulous. Oh, thank you so much. This is going to be great, and I'll be encouraging my daughter to ear read it. It'd be wonderful.
Yes, thank you.
She's got her own stories to tell, being a U.S. citizen starting in 2010 when she came here from Ethiopia. She has quite a few stories to tell, but this will encourage her because she needs to know that she can do this too. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, Kaya. And we'll look forward perhaps to your daughter's book at some point.
Yes, I hope so. People have been telling her and me, hey, she's got quite a story to tell, you know. So when she's ready, I hope she will do it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kaya. You take care.
And, bye-bye.
And by the way, since we're talking about availability here of the paper book, I don't want to say hard copy because it's a paperback. It's a paperback. Midtown Reader, My Favorite Books, and Seven Local Boys and Girl Clubs libraries around the area.
As well as palomasdream.org.
Palomasdream.org. And I am sure that Barnes & Noble would be picking it up at some point. I would think so. It is, again, such a great tale. And as Kaya said, if we could have more personal stories from people who have met particular challenges or have accomplished some pretty remarkable things, and to help break down some of the animosity that we see. Do you have any thoughts on that? We seem to have a lot of people yelling at each other now, perhaps more than I remember when I was your age, Paloma.
So I think that we can solve a lot of things through words, and we can do a lot of things through actions as well. And I think that I totally just want to throw out the idea of that wonderful comment that we all thought was great when we were small, and sticks and stones can break your bones, but words can never hurt you. That's such a lie. It's such a lie. And I think that there's so much power to words and the way of being, and you can say so much, and you can really take a life through words, and you can also help a life come back to where it was. And it's a very powerful mix, and I think that if you could remind me what the question is, I will not start to derail.
Okay. But the fact that so many people kind of live in their own little bubbles where their viewpoint, their thoughts, the way they approach situations, that's the only way.
Right. That is inaccurate. There are many, many ways. There are over 1,000 ways to solve a Rubik's Cube. And that's not even accurate anymore. There's more than 1,000. And there are so many different ways. And you have to take time to listen and be acceptive. And you may not have to combine those two all at once, but you can just be receptive and want to listen to what other people have to say, because I believe David Bowie said that when he was talking to an interviewer that he respected the opinion, but he did not agree with it, which we can do that. And we are all capable of respecting something, but not accepting it. So those are two different things that don't always have to collide.
Well, you mentioned Bowie. What other music do you personally enjoy?
Musicals. I like to listen to a lot of musicals. I like a lot of Broadway, and I don't personally like pop music. I like music from my parents' era, like Simon and Garfunkel and all those great humans. Like Elton John is one of my sister's favorites, so we listen to him a lot. And it's a very large variety, but I would say I rely on my Broadway amazing playlist of Hamilton all the time.
Now, you are also headed, to Canada very soon, right?
Yeah, I am headed to Canada, and I will be spending my first time in Canada. I've never been, so it's going to be very, very exciting. I will have a lot of wonderful new adventures while I'm there.
Okay, Quebec and Montreal, I think, is on the itinerary, right?
Yes.
Oh, that is exciting. And at some point, speaking of Broadway, you'll be getting back to New York, I'm sure.
I will be doing the wonderful modeling camp in New York, and I will be traveling and extraordinarily exploring myself in a new artsy kind of way in the model of fashion.
Your model of fashion, we mentioned music and the fact that you got a keyboard, don't you?
I have a keyboard. I don't know how to play the keyboard. I learned how to do Star Wars, like the opening thing of one thing. I don't even remember. It was like the opening of the main...
Dun, 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 dun.
Right, yeah.
That fanfare
thing. Like that fan
yeah.
thing. Uh-huh. That's all I owe that and Joy to the World, the first like three notes, but not much else.
Yeah, but that's another thing that you can do now with technology, because you can play along with pre-recorded stuff on a keyboard.
A lot of things you can do now with apps like GarageBand on Apple and wow.
I'll have to catch up with Taylor, the guy behind the glass, because he's really into Pro Tools and stuff, and he can show you how to do that as
yes.
well. So you can be a music producer before it's all over. Another book in the works? Or do you see one in your future?
One in my future, and I can't guarantee what it is. I like to write, as I mentioned, in the first few quarters of this. But I don't think I'll go back to relying on my own story to make more content. I wrote one. I like to write musicals and plays and stuff, so I wrote a few that I'm in the works of, like, trying to get out and make actual storylines out of. So I like to write, and I'm looking forward to more writing contests and producing more work, and I don't know how soon or how distant this will be, but I hope I'll get more out there.
Well, there are other experiences, though, that have to be gotten first, because I would suspect since a gap remains, you're going to be back.
I will be back.
Yes, at the 2019 session of the Florida Legislature.
You can't get rid of me.
She's a perennial. She's like Barbara Devane and some of these other guys who show up there all the time, but they seem to have a better track record than those who just come and they wear their T-shirts and they do a chant out there in
right.
front of the dolphins, and then they all go home. You have to be persistent and patient on this stuff.
Yes, definitely. It is a process.
Are there any, since, of course, it's a changing cast of characters at the legislature because of term limits and all that, but are there any advocates that you want to give a shout out to, some folks at the Capitol who have helped you in this endeavor?
Not necessarily at the Capitol. Well, I have a great team, and I have had a great team, and I want to say thank you to all of the people who have made my dream possible, and it has been a great journey. And I would like to say thanks to Cameron Barton, Alex Campbell, and Mike Van Sickle, because this is, and my parents, obviously, for giving me the amazingness of being able to breathe. This has been great. But I've gotten here with the help of so many people that would take more than the hour that I'm given to talk about.
It would have to have a very, very long credit roll
right
at the end of this movie here.
The movie would just be just credits. It'd be the scenes behind it, and then you just have it continue to roll.
Well, yeah, again, no young woman is an island on this, but so from about 1.2 million, got to get it up to 8 million here. So
yes.
Can, without doing spoiler alerts here, any insight as to what sort of, I guess, strategy you're going to use to get this message across to pretty soon a whole new group of lawmakers? Again, term limits, election coming up. You're going to have to keep educating these people.
Yes. Personal experience. If you have a cause that connects with you, you can rely on personal experience if you feel your story is strong enough to share. And I think I have a very detrimental, fundamental part of my lobbying career because of my story, and that's how I'm connected to this issue. And they want to hear the citizen's perspective. I believe they want to hear the citizen's perspective because they are there to represent. And it's really helpful if you go out and vote for the people you want to represent you, and then if you want to be on the other side where you're going and telling them what you want to represent you about, then you need to make a strategy plan, and you need to find the developmental things that you want to put in place and go through a roadmap of it. And it requires a team, because as Helen Keller once said, alone you can do so little, together we can do so much. So it requires so many people to make this possible.
Yeah, but it also requires someone to kind of take the lead and step forward and go,
yes,
okay, I'm putting myself out here, and it may be inconvenient, it may be time-consuming, it may be exhausting, it may not be what I want to do all the time, but there's something bigger than me that I need to take care of.
There has to be devotion. And if there's not devotion and you don't feel dedicated to what you're doing, it shouldn't feel like work. It should feel like something you enjoy doing. And if you don't 100, you don't have to fall in love with what you do. You don't have to marry it, because you can't marry an inanimate object, not to my knowledge anyway. And it's important that you find yourself enjoying and wanting to continue onwards. It's not something that should be, oh, I'm just getting paid. If anything is above my pay grade, I don't have to do it. You have to be willing to step up and take the reins.
But see, now you're not talking like a lobbyist, because some of these folks are hired guns.
Right.
They may have a connection to an issue, but of course they are getting a check.
Yes.
And you are not.
I am not. No, that is accurate.
Well, that sets you apart, though, because this is an issue that you are driving the bus on this one, along with the help of the team you just mentioned, Paloma, and also the other, how many other young people around Florida have the anomaly that you're dealing with?
My anomaly is one out of every 100,000 births, so I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, huh? But we have a state of now heading towards, 19 million people. So I would suspect there are a growing number of young people who have the same type of visual deficiency you do, or a similar type of thing, yeah, that would have to be dealt with as well. And the gap affects them too.
Yes, it does. It affects all 926 of us right now.
We only have a few moments left to go. Paloma Rambana, thank you so much for coming on. And any kind of final thoughts that you would like to impart to our folks here who listen to this station?
Well, thank you for letting me have this opportunity. This has been a wonderful experience. And you can order my book on palomasdream.org. And it has been wonderful getting to chat away my hour here on Perspectives.
Well, it has been a delight to have you on, and also, again, to read your book, which I am going to reread tonight.
Wow, with the insight of a human who's just blabbed the story.
Paloma Rambana, thank you so much, and all the best to you, and have yourself a great summer and a great rest of your middle school, high school, and life career. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Perspectives produced by WFSU in Tallahassee. Technical assistance today, Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls, and I'm Tom Flanagan. I'm taking next week off before we dive into the political season that we mentioned, which will start the week of July 9th here on Perspectives. But be sure to tune in a week from today as our WFSU news team takes over the helm. We'll meet again in 2 weeks right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.